What's up, everybody? Welcome back to my podcast. And today's guest is none other than Sani Bečirović from Slovenia and currently working at Panathinaikos as the technical director. We talked a lot about his past as a player, the injuries he went through, the rehab process, how mentally tough it was for him, almost barely not able to walk again. And from there, going into the highest mountain of European basketball. It's pretty impressive. We had a really good conversation, great flow. We talked about the technicalities of his job currently at Panathinaikos, also the experiences he had at Olimpia Ljubljana, and exchanged a lot of laughs at the end. Please stay tuned. Also, subscribe if you're not a subscriber yet. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. Have fun. Bye. Sunny boy, what's up?
All good, Benas. How are you, my friend? Or should I say Broly, you know?
Broly.
Broly.
You're well aware. Who was your first Lithuanian teammate?
My first Lithuanian teammate was in Olimpia, Žukauskas.
Žukauskas, okay. Mindaugas.
Mindaugas, of course.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, he was the first Lithuanian three-point killer that I had in my career. Then I had some. And Šarūnas, of course, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Them two were the first in my career.
You Šiška also. Šiška was out.
Šiška was afterwards, and Robi Avtokas as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had Jonas Mačulis in Milano, and the big guy, sorry, I forgot his name, the center. Shit, I'm bad. I'm old, man. I keep forgetting my teammates. But yeah, I played with many of Lithuanian top level players.
Yeah. How is your back doing? I know we're pretty much connected right now with our backs.
We are. I mean, I got a knock on wood. I'm doing a bit better. You know, one physiotherapist guy here, he helped me a lot doing my exercises daily, and another, you know, thing that shows that we are getting older, my friend. So all the little things are coming out.
And sitting too much. Yeah, sitting too much.
Oh,
and
then this definitely. Yeah.
How much did your knee injuries, how many surgeries on your knees did you have?
Damn, brother, it was 13 surgeries.
Wow.
Yes.
How much do you think that impacts your life right now?
If I would say, I mean, now less, you know, because one of my last surgeries was a big surgery that I did like 14 years ago. Yeah, the stem cell surgery. They did a hell of a job in, you know, Treviso, where they basically not only improved the quality of my daily life, but they extended my career as well, you know, because, you know, in when we were together in Moscow, you know, I was done, man. You know, my done, honestly. And after that, this was the year after, I go to Treviso with, you know, my big and good friend, Sasha Djordjevic. He kind of convinced me to give it a try for one more year. And he succeeded because it was one of my best years, you know, where I really had fun again. I started loving basketball again. And after that season, I did the big surgery because honestly, I thought, okay, I want to give it a try, if not continuing playing, just to have a better quality of life. And I must say it was the best decision I ever made. You know, it really helped me a lot. And afterwards, I played for another 4 years. So
What exactly was the last surgery that improved your...
I mean,
your...
it was the stem cell surgery. You know, they took the stem cell, but we are talking 2011, you know.
Took
from my hips. And then they cleaned both of my knees because I had many cleaning to do. Not only cartilage, but we're talking about severe arthritis already. And basically, I went in year after that because I had kind of bone spur or something like this going to my tendon. And when I saw the new knee or the knee after 1 year, it was completely white, you know. It was completely different knee than a year ago. So, yeah, that really changed my everyday life. So I could be, again, let's say, more young. But today, honestly, it bothers me a lot. But I got used to it, you know.
Yeah. I think once, like, our bodies I'd never played obviously at that level, so it's kind of, but my body was broken down from the beginning after having already two knee surgeries in college. And then the downstream effects of that, you know, long term, it's going to be like training forever. I cannot stop training. Otherwise, it's going to be a complete disaster.
Unfortunately, you know, I was the same until I got to a position where I am now. And I never understood when people said, you know, I'm tired, I'm drained, you know, mentally, which then, you know, transfers to your physical as well. And I got to tell you, since I started working behind a desk or, you know, being what I am now, a technical director in Panathinaikos, before that in Cedevita Olimpia, I start feeling it, man, because, you know, every loss, every game, every travel, everything, it kind of gets to you. And it's not like an excuse. I know the guys that, you know, practice wherever they go. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that my body is broken, you know, so all the little pains and things, if I practice, it's not like they go down crazy. Sometimes they even increase, you know, the pain. And then I'm like, man, why I'm doing this? Because, you know, the pain gets bigger. And if I don't practice, of course, the pain gets a little bit down and then it hits up again. So it's like a vicious circle from which I can't get out, unfortunately, you know.
When you played, obviously after that last surgery, it improved, but you at some point you probably realized that you were not going to be the same anymore. When did it hit you that your career, like in terms of it's like it's going to come to an early end most likely and that all these surgeries going to get caught up?
To be honest, man, you know, the day I stopped playing was the day I gave up because, you know, I couldn't mentally cope with the pain and with the everyday discipline that you have to have, you know. This was the day that I was like, okay, I give up, you know. The pain is because, you know, I don't want to, you know, sound like a victim or somebody that's complaining because every professional athlete deals with this, you know.
Of course.
But for me, it was like, yeah, I was like, okay, I cannot control mentally the pain because you know how many times you wake up from the afternoon nap and my knee was swollen or, you know, I was like, fuck, how? We can swear on podcast, right?
Yeah, of course.
You know, then I would like, damn, how I'm going to warm up, not play, you know, playing was way out, you know, there, far away. Yeah. How the hell I'm going to warm up now? You know, this was my, many afternoon naps were like, damn. But then, you know,
pills?
Yeah. Okay. Pills. But, you know, also this mental toughness that I think that all the professional athletes have. That your level of how you say, pain tolerance.
Yeah.
So high. You know, that now that I'm retired or, you know, it's going way, way, way down.
Yeah.
I understand what I've been through, what I went through and, you know, all the surgeries and pain rehabilitation and recoveries are took a toll on my body and my mental state as well, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And the threshold is a big thing because that's how I neglected my body too. The traveling, you feel the back a little bit here. You do some workout. It's like, that's fine. It's okay. Like I can live with that. You know, it's like I can live with it, but I cannot live with it permanently when it gets worse, you know. And then after a while, when it gets to a point where you don't have the quality of life, it's too late already. And then you just dug yourself a hole. And that threshold that other people don't have, that baseline, that catches up with the athletes, with the former athletes, because if you're able to tolerate pain, when I was sitting on a table, a massage table or any like treatment table, I was like, oh, you can tolerate pain. Yeah, like done it so many times. Now, like it's normal when other people jump off the table, but then at the same time in daily life, when you have back pain or knee pain, like you got to take care of it as soon as possible. So it doesn't get like just down spiral.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you were, you're also drafted. That's one thing I wanted to ask you. Like when you were drafted by the Nuggets, what was the process for you that, you know, like you're staying in Europe, they have your rights. And at some point, like, how much hope did you have early on, you know, to make it over and to come over and to be an NBA player? And then when did that hope subside where you think like, okay, like this is, was there a point where you were like thinking, okay, this is not going to happen. I need to be with 2 feet on the ground here where I'm at.
I mean, it's a good question because it's a quite funny story, actually. I got drafted the year I did my first big surgery, you know, in Virtus Bologna, and that was the year I was off. So that meant to me a lot because it meant like, oh man, I was good, you know, not even knowing it. And the year I was making the rehab, and it took me all year long, you know, I got drafted, you know. So that was a huge, let's say, boost for me in order to try and come back. And, you know, I did everything possible. I mean, there are so many stories that I think we should do 3 podcasts on that, you know. But the basic thing was like, once I got drafted, you know, I was like, okay, I'm coming back. And then the fact that I went to Denver and, you know, I met all the people there, the staff there, you know, they really gave me hope, you know. Then I played the summer league with them, even though my knees were terrible at the time. I was nowhere near to being a player that I eventually didn't become again. Everything was evolving in the right way. So, you know, in that summer league, then Varese approaches me. They give me a contract, an offer. I have a hell of a season, or let's say half season, where I'm basically competing for the MVP of the league. We are playing great. And then, unfortunately, like what you said before, you know, once you get injured on a certain point of your body, it kind of starts, you know, like, okay, you feel the Achilles tendon, you feel the plantar fasciitis, you start to get back.
Compensation,
constant compensation, you know. And this is what happened to me the first time. Was like, I got terrible plantar fasciitis on both of my feet. And I was done, you know. I was like, fudge, you know, I mean, now I got to fight also through this. The knees are not a problem. This is the problem, you know.
Yeah.
And there I started to realize like, damn, man, this is going to be forever. You know, I'm going to be in this circle forever. So I need, first of all, I gather around myself a super medical team. You know, I had my personal doctor. I had my personal coach. I had my personal strength coach, athletic trainer, you know. So these were all the things that I never thought before that, you know, a professional athlete might need. And it's good to have them before serious stuff happens to you, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is like advice I give to all the young kids or whoever's out there. Really take care of your body, surround yourself with quality people, you know. It's a thing that really came to me late. I mean, early in my age, but late in my career, because I never looked at it this way, you know. And again, after that, I was traveling back and forth to Denver. Even that first year when I did the summer league with them, they offered me to come to preseason, but they told me immediately, like, you know what, you will not be with the team. You will go to the G League. We will see. And me being from Europe and competitive as I am, I was like, you know, guys, I just want to play basketball. You know, I love the sport so much that for me at that moment, it's not like I want to be in the NBA. I just want to play basketball. Doesn't matter at what level, you know. And once again, like I said before, the people from Varese, they gave me a chance, you know, and I was always thankful for that, because from then on, my career kind of started slowly going back to where it was before, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I was also wondering that your father is still coaching?
Yeah, but he's still in China.
China, okay. So how did he influence throughout your career as a player? Like that's the father-son relationship from player to coach. It's a unique one, you know. Like, in what senses did he impact you? When did you ask him for advice? Did you ever ask him for advice? Did he tell you from the side when you need to do certain things, what he saw? Because I'm sure he watched you a lot the whole time. So,
I mean, look, there are let's say 2 parts in my life where at the beginning I had a coach, I didn't have a father, you know, until my injury, you know, and then our relationship changed, you know. So he impacted me a lot, you know. He is my idol. He always was, you know. I always wanted to prove him wrong because I was never, you know, as good as, I don't know, Juan Carlos Navarro, or I don't know, Kirilenko, or, you know, all the guys, Tony Parker, all the guys from my generation, let's say, you know. So I always not only competed against these guys, but I always competed against my father, you know, to prove him wrong, to prove him that, you know, I'm better. So at the initial, let's say, stage of my life and career, you know, he was my biggest critic and somebody who know how to push the right buttons to really get me going, you know. The good thing or the bad thing, depending on how you look at it, was that in our house, there was always a mother that was a peacemaker, you know, that was a, like United Nations kind of a woman with a blue helmet on, you know, keeping everybody in one corner. Then I had my sister, you know, she was a big supporter. She still is, you know, that was always there for me. And basically, Dražen Petrović being my idol, I really pushed myself too much. You know, I pushed myself always over the limits, you know. Mm-hmm. And once again, I only mentioned a couple of names, but, you know, being surrounded by so many good players, you know, that afterwards made great careers. It was something not only like today where you can daily, you know, see what other guys are doing, you know. We were just hearing about these guys, you know, like how super they were and what was going on and, you know, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I was reading and getting the, I don't know, information. So I had this in me, you know, I always wanted to be better than all of these guys, meeting them on the European Championships, competing against them. And then, unfortunately, the injury happens and my dad, from being a coaching figure, becomes a father figure, you know. And this is what helped me a lot, because he gave me the, how to say, not only support in that moment where, of course, you went through injuries, you went through rehabs, you know how hard it is, and that is a really like a roller coaster. One day you're feeling great and you see the progress, and then the next 3 days you're down, you know. And that's when family or the people that you care about and they care about you the most come in place. And, you know, for me, my father was that figure again, because he put together the team of people. One of them was Miki Starčević, that was played a huge role in my comeback, you know, because he was with me 24/7, lifting me up and guiding me through these difficult moments. Because again, for a father to see his child suffer, you know, it's heartbreaking. And now, yeah, me being myself father, you know, of two beautiful children, I can only imagine his pain at the time, because I don't know if many people know that after my big surgery, you know, my first diagnosis was that I will never walk again normally, yet alone play, you know. And Matijaš Modiš, my big friend and brother, bigger brother, was in the surgery room with me. I mean, you know, just so he can afterwards translate to my dad what was actually done to me and what happened. And, you know, even to this day, Matijaš is saying, man, when I saw them cut you up, you know, and what happened afterwards, and the words that I needed to say to your dad was like one of the worst 5 minutes of my life, you know. So it was tough, it was difficult, but once again, when I look back, you know, I went through a lot and I gained even more back. So it was definitely worth it. Nevertheless, now we're having problems that we're having, I would definitely do it again, you know.
You know, like the mental growth with that, because you have to fight through it. You can't give up, you know. You have a goal in mind, and that's one thing that I think that is going to stick with anybody who has injuries and fights through them and comes back, is that, like, yeah, I've fought my way back. And then any other kind of obstacles in your way, you're already your threshold for pain tolerance, but also, you know, like for the perseverance, for the tolerance, it's stress tested, you know, like they stress test cars, they do it all these dummies. And then, you know, you see if it works and if they can get through it, if they can get through it. And that's when humans get tested as well. They get stress tested in different situations, and everybody has a different threshold for that. And I think life opens up doors if you can get through those that you never imagined exist.
Look, being, you know, I was one of the most, let's say, prominent, talented guys, you know, overnight. This changed, you know, and imagine waking up from a surgery. Sorry, and somebody saying to you, you know what, now that we opened you up, most probably we will never walk again normally, or it's going to be, you know, huge miracle if you do. And not only that, you know, my story is even more complicated because I had a sepsis infection as well. So, you know, this came afterwards and they had to basically, you know, save my legs. And again, the biggest and the most difficult sentence that my father heard, but I didn't know about it at the time, was, you know, when I was going in for my third, fourth surgery after we found out that I had infection, you know. The doctor in Slovenia this time told him, like, you know what, if the bacteria came into the core of the bone, you know, it's quite possible that, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And he was like, what, you know. But thank God, again, you know, there's somebody above us that's,
wow,
you know, in all these situations, defending, I mean, protecting me, you know, or keeping me safe, that I was able to, again, become a European champion or play at the highest level, meet so many different cultures, different teams, different persons, you know, I consider my friends. And like people say, honestly, I feel blessed, you know, I feel blessed for all the journey that I had to go through.
Sliding door, man, like that, those things can be life altering, and you never thought it could be, you know, until it can happen. One thing I was also thinking about that I remembered when I started reading about it, I was like, oh yeah, like you were an assistant coach too. How, what are you dipping a toe in the coaching world? Well, how was that like in at Panathinaikos with Georgievich, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I told you, no, it was amazing. Basically for me, it was amazing because, right after I finished my career, you know, I had a chance to join my, at the time, idol and, you know, good friend, because we worked together in Treviso when he was my coach, and I got to know Sasha, you know, so much better. I came here, and the funny story is that at the time, you know, because I stopped playing a couple of months earlier, you know, in the preparation period, you know, I was not only assistant coach, I was a practice player, you know, I was assistant coach, I was, you know, afterwards, I became also assistant to Manos, you know.
Multi-purpose.
But he was like, you know what, we have four assistant coaches, I don't want to do this. So basically, when I look back, you know, I went through all the roles to really understand how the team is functioning, you know.
Yeah.
And what's needed, you know, what the coaches talk about, what you guys analyze, you know, what's the focus for GM, what's the focus for a team manager. You know, I was a team manager, so take care of the tickets, take care of hotels, take care of the food, you know, talking to travel agency. And for me, it was like, damn, you know, so many things need to fall in place in order for you to present yourself just with pair of sneakers, you know, and play a game or do a practice, you know. And once again, things were happening for a reason, you know, for me to really understand the varieties and everything that is needed in order to be successful as an organization and then as a GM, sports director, technical director, whatever we want to call it.
So in that role, you actually, that's when you figure out what you want to do?
Look, the thing that I figured out at that time was that I don't want to be a coach because it took me away from my family for the first time. You know, we were separated, and for the first time I saw that, you know, there's no days off if you want to be a really successful and dedicated coach. Even when there's a day off, you need to work with the players that didn't play so much, or, you know, the injured guys and so on, you know, and because being in this, let's say, program, or I don't know even how to call it, in this schedule since age of 8, I wanted to step out of, you know, this schedule or this pressure. So The funny thing was that, you know, Sasha, after we got fired here, he got an offer from Bayern Munich, okay? And before anything, we talked about it. He was like, man, do you really, you know, you have a beautiful family, the children are still young, blah, blah, blah. Do you really want to spend the next 20, 30 years of your life, you know, not being there for them? If so, you know, I will gladly take you with me. But my advice is take some time for yourself and for your family, you know. So again, you know, him being what he is, he kind of opened up my eyes. And that was the time I said, you know what, you're right. You know, I want to take my time. I want to live the life as a normal person. But still, you know, I wanted to be connected to basketball on the highest level. So I go and I do the agent's test and everything. So I became an agent. And just to be involved with everything, I started knowing also this part of the job or, you know, the part of basketball. So everything again was happening for a reason, you know. And once I got the hang of the job or knew how to do stuff, the first offer as a sports director of Olympia that merged with Cedevita, becoming Cedevita Olympia, comes knocking on my door, you know. And it was something that, honestly, being my team, you know, in my home city, you know, I couldn't say no. Any even though I was already climbing the ladder as an agent, you know, doing pretty well. When the opportunity knocked on my door, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. You know, I want to be able to contribute to a team success, putting together a team, you know, working with the coach, board, agents, whatever. So at that time, I felt like, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, it's a good way to get a taste for everything. Like, you got a taste of assistant coach job, front office job, and while being at Panathinaikos, then you get to see all the different angles around the team, and then even agent, and you know you're getting like introduced to the contract, to the contract negotiations, to all those things, the law, bylaws, and everything that come with it, and then all of a sudden this opens up the door to Olympia. How did you, how was the learning curve? Was it like, did you have to learn and pick up a lot of things really quickly? And what were those things that you kind of like stumbled on upon early on?
Look, I mean, to be honest, it was a huge change, you know. Why? Because as long as you operate as an assistant coach, as long as you operate as an agent, you know, you have certain level of responsibility, right? I mean, it's not all about you, but once you become management, you know, your responsibility becomes much, much, much bigger, you know, because at the beginning, once I entered Cedevita Olympia, to be honest, I didn't sleep for like 3-4 months, you know. I was afraid of making a bureaucratic mistake, you know. I was afraid to miss something in the contract, you know. Also the people, you know, coming from Croatia, the bylaws, the laws, the taxation, everything is different. So, you know, because I knew many things from before, and I'm eager to learn, I was trying to learn all the segments of the, you know, club. And once again, really for 3-4 months, you know, I was in constant fear of not knowing and making a huge mistake that will damage the team, you know. And but thankfully, you know, I was surrounded again with guys that know their job, you know, Davor Špinec, Krešimir Novosel, you know, there's also Tomáš Berločnik that was a president at the time, and Emil Tedeschi, that gave me this trust. And it's like, you know what, it's normal to make some mistakes as long as you show us that you're willing to learn, you know. And this is again something that helped me a lot, you know, to become more and more loose, more and more convinced about what you're doing is good, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's those things. I think for a lot of young executives that go into this position, you know, sports director, technical director, and being responsible for the team, it's kind of like you're going in blind a lot of times, but for the first time. So it's kind of you have to be ready. And I've never done it, so I don't know. But you have to really be able to be flexible and to anticipate certain things where the problems could come from, apart from the team structure, but also outside the team structure, like you said, the contract situation, then agents contacting you, and then certain things that you overlooked. And those things, I think, are the hardest to prepare for when you don't have experience. And then you have to have mentorship as well. Did you have any kind of mentors that you contacted and you consulted with always?
I mean, look, there are two guys that I was calling a lot, actually three, you know, Maurizio Gherardini, Claudio Coldebella, and Baiesi Daniele, you know, all of them that are working at the highest level, you know. Of course, I had mentorship also at home. But like you said before, you know, the not knowing, you know, how to get an LOC, you know, what it's needed, when are the dates, transfer dates, you know, how many foreigners you can have. So you need to learn quite a lot, you know. And that's for us, you know, being a players, it's the most difficult part because you're not 16 years anymore, you know, old. You're a grown man. You've been given this responsibility. And all of a sudden, you need to, you know, show results by not making a huge mistake, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there are everyday problems that are going on with the team, you know, after you lose a game, after travel, after an injury, you know, after a guy that it's not performing well. So you need to find, you know, I mean, it's so many things going on at the same time that, again, I cannot find another word, but I was blessed that I was surrounded again by the great team of people that each one of them were taking, you know, a piece of responsibility off. And then we kind of really created this bond that was great where everybody was supporting each other, you know, same like we're doing here right now in Panathinaikos.
Yeah, you have to. And I think that's, the people around, and I gave a speech also here in Germany about the importance of not, like, you know, being a lone wolf and fighting by yourself and doing, like, the people around matter. And also, if you win and you didn't enjoy the process with the people that you were working with, it's not worth it. Like, you have to have good people around you and prioritize character, prioritize the values that you bring into your program. So because the battle all along is going to be tough, and you need good people around you to support each other and to live through those battles together and not backstab, not to give up, not to fade away when it gets tougher. But you need somebody that you can collaborate with, trust each other, and be open so you can get the solution and find the issues together.
Look, what I tend to say often is, like, sports environment is a specific environment, right? Because at the end of the day, we all win, we all lose. Like you said before, you know, one man band doesn't exist anymore. Like it was in the past, you know, there was one guy controlling the whole club, you know, from the cleaning lady to the signing the contracts, you know. And I think all of us experience at some point that, oh man, this is the guy, you know, he's for everything, right? I think that today, you know, you really need to look at the offices and give credit to each and every one of them. Because, you know, if there is a guy that is selling tickets missing or he's sick, that the gym is not full, you know.
Yeah, it's
simple as that. And when we play 5-on-5, you're not doing it all by yourself. You know, you're not the best rebounder, the best scorer, the best assist guy, the best stealer. So, you know, I always say, really, it's a team sport. You know, whatever we do, we have to have accountability. This is first thing, and responsibility. So once you approach in this way the management of the club, it becomes easier, you know. But it's a process, because if me and you are going to work tomorrow together, of course, you know, we need to trust each other, and I need to see what you are capable of doing, you know. Even though we are friends, there's always the business side to it, you know. So, but again, I think that all the athletes that went through the learning process and that went through the training process, you know how it is. Day by day, bit by bit, I'm getting better. I'm getting to know things much more automatic, you know. And then at some point it becomes like, okay, now I'm a EuroLeague player. This is how it is, you know.
Yeah, bit by bit, as there's team on the court and there's a team off the court, I think, is always.
Absolutely.
even even tennis players, you know, even like solo athletes, they have to have a team around them. It's never a one man show. It's always like a sports psychologist, a treatment guy, physio, sport. There's always somebody around you. It has to be a multi-purpose organization kind of.
Yeah.
Let me share the screen with you. You see this?
Yep.
Yep. So we're going to move on. Before we go into the technicalities of your job, I want to go into your past a little bit. And we're going to hear at ProBalls.com, my very loyal sponsor, the statistical platform.
Okay.
And for all the nerds out there that want to find certain things, that we're going to find a little bit about you today. And so here you can also search your games, your totals, your splits and records, but we're going to go into your teammates. Okay. And so I'm going to ask you, who do you think you played the most games with throughout your whole career?
God damn. I have no clue, man. No idea. I mean, shit. I don't know. Honestly, okay. Whatever I would say now, it would be really like a wild guess. I have no idea.
Okay, it was Panathinaikos. I'll give you that. That's good. That was going to be the one that you had the most teammates with.
So
most games with.
Greek or foreign guy?
Dimitris
Diamantidis.
So Diamantidis was the top guy, 98 games.
You see, I knew it, man. I knew it. I would say Primož Brezec because we played in Ljubljana together. But
in Rome.
76. And in Rome, yeah. But I was thinking like maybe it's Dimitris, you know. Nice.
It's also national team kind of throws it off a little bit because national team is also here with Primož. But it was close. My 98 games with 3D.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah, so all those top three and in the 90s.
Great.
Top five. Just the top three in the 90s and then 84, 83, Mike Batiste, Tsatsaris.
Yes.
And so now we're going to opponents. Who did you play? I mean, if you can't guess your teammates, I mean, that's going to be hard.
Yeah, man, I was never a stat guy. I mean, I could remember, you know, what was going on in the game play by play. What I missed, what I did wrong, but I never cared about stats, you know. I never even looked of something. I didn't even know that something like this existed, man, you know. So it's good.
It's a new experience, and not many people are able to guess it. Sometimes it's easy when you played less teams on less teams, but you played on a lot of teams, so it kind of makes it difficult.
Mahmoud Abdul Rauf is there. I remember this game, man, in Rosetta. He scored 27, I think, without sweating, man. And we had a team of defense, you know, the guys that could defend, but this guy was something else.
He was unique, huh?
I never met anybody. This was after his NBA career. He was, let's say, old already, but you know, the ease and the moves and you know everything. He was one of those guys that he impressed me a lot, you know.
Yeah. So and the one that you played the most with?
The most No idea, man. Let's see.
21 games, Luca Garri.
Come on, man.
And Biella, Roma, Livorno, Varese.
That's crazy.
Then also Mordente played. Yeah. He played in.
Yeah, this makes sense for Marco.
It's all Italian league. Yeah, mostly Italian league players.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah, World Cup also. So is this some matchup? Drew Nicholas.
Yeah.
That's it. So everybody who's interested in statistics, go to ProBalls.com. Very easy to find. ProBalls.com, the number one statistical platform from France.
Okay.
All right. So now back at it. We're gonna go to your technical job. So a little bit more about politics at first, because this job is always a triangle. You know, it can be a triangle. Outside the team, I call it a triangle of trust when people introduce me to somebody that I don't know, but they know me and the other person knows them. So you kind of have like a little bit an advantage in terms of trust, and it's easier to gain trust. But on a triangle within the organization, you know, if you're the technical director responsible for sports part, but you're also, you got to be close to the coach. You got to always know what he wants, how he sees the game, and how he, what his philosophy is. At the same time, you have to report to the superiors, you know, whether it's ownership, GMs. There's just kind of there's a roof above you, and then juggling all that, I can imagine it's very difficult in terms of communication and politics. How did you? What situations are shaky? What situations should people be aware of that go into this position and not knowing what comes at them?
I mean, what the situations that might shake you and that do happen is lack of communication, you know, or just too many times worrying in your head that something already happened and it didn't happen. Or, you know, I know that our job is to predict things, or, you know, to like try to protect the team, the coach from certain events happening, or if they do, to be ready. But many times I think that we create a problem due to a lack of communication, or there is something that was said and it was misinterpreted, you know, misunderstood, and then, you know, the wheels start to spin. So, but other than that, and I always say, you know, we need to have 100% transparent communication. That's the rule that I live by, you know, in my family and in work. Again, I'm super happy because next to me or with me, you know, there's Dimitris Kondos, which really makes my life and my job much, much easier, you know. And the structure of the club itself is great, because, you know, me and him, we take care about everything that has to do with the team. We have a team of people in the office that are taking care about marketing, you know, let's say finances, all this stuff. And I don't want to go now by names because I don't want to forget somebody. But again, we have our jobs divided, so we don't have to think so much about technical stuff that doesn't, let's say, directly influence on the team performance, you know. And again, like you said before, of course, there are people, you know, always above you to whom you report, you know, good or bad. And the most important thing is really to always, always, even though it's very, very difficult, try to distance yourself from the problem and the pressure that gets created during the season in order, you know, to see the forest and not only the tree, you know. And I think that, again, being an ex-player at the highest level, this is one of the things that comes very useful, because you're used to being under pressure and have been dealing with the pressure all your life, you know. And again, it all then comes down to like we said at the beginning, to communication.
Communicate, that's my favorite. I mean, everybody's going to probably smile because that's my favorite topic. It's like, that's the topic that I live and die by, basically. And without knowing, I started to study that in college because I was put into that major. And it turns out that's like, it's made for me, but also it makes me overthink a lot of times, because you start the communication, like you said, is also a lot of times about interpretation. So, and when you're nowadays, you message a lot of things, and then if one message, one word can be misinterpreted, it can change the whole conversation. You know, like it changes the whole perception of you. It changes the whole perception of the idea you were talking about. It can get personal. It can get out of hand. It's just kind of, it's a security thing, insecurity thing, where sometimes we're like, oh, what does he mean by that? Like, is he trying to come at me? Is he trying to be funny here? You know, like in Goodfellas. What do you mean funny? What do you say funny? How funny?
But look, I have a solution to that problem. You know, I rarely, whenever there is serious stuff in place, I rarely text. I always want to hear the voice, the tone of the voice. You know, I want to be 100% sure, like you said, not to have a doubt in my mind, I want to be sure how it was said, when it was said, you know, and being very intuitive, like you said before, it helps me a lot to read many of situations, you know, and again, the emotions are running high, you know, you have to understand how it is to talk after the game, after a loss, after, you know, there's so many different situations where really you need to be, you know, alert for all these little signals that then help you make a decision, you know. And like I said many times, I'm the person that hates changes, you know. I don't like to make a change just to make a change because it's, I don't know, modern or because somebody thinks that it's time or because the street is saying, you know. I really, once we decide to make a change, you know, I consult people, but I really need to see the difference in a quality upgrade if we are about to make any kind of change, you know, going from, let's say, changing a jersey or whatever to changing a player, you know.
Yeah. What's a red flag for you, like in terms of communication, where you feel like, oh, this is going into the wrong direction, we need to be careful here? Is there a red flag that you feel like within the communication process that needs to be addressed and then double checked and make sure that the person is not taking it wrongly?
I mean, honestly, I respond very bad to aggressive type of communication. You know, I'm not the type that responds well to that. Because, again, I've been through the same process, like I said before, you know, having a dad for coach and, you know, having double authority in the house. So I tend to react immediately bad to that. But I've gotten much, much better and I worked a lot on that, you know. Second red flag for me is like constant, how would say it in English, constant pushing of one opinion, you know. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, like we said before, you cannot be the best scorer, rebounder and you know, defensive player of the team. So I always try to listen to the people, and I don't like when people don't even consider somebody's opinion, you know. And I think, again, this is a huge quality in persons that have this wide frame approaching the problem or the matter. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much it, you know. And excuses. I don't do well with excuses. And again, this has to do with me going through so many difficult situations with health and career as well, that, you know, I always say, come on, man, you know, excuses. No, I'm not the right. If you were looking with an excuse to find a shoulder to cry on, I'm not that person, you know. So this would be the three main things where I either cut the communication or I shut it down completely. Like, you know, I mean, I try to steer it in a different direction, but yeah. If I see that something is like this, then it needs to be cut.
Yeah, that's good, because it's a very it's a mature perception, you know, perspective from like a helicopter view from the top, and you observe all those things from when you remove yourself, and you kind of feel this is not right, this could be improved here. And when you're in practice, I'm sure that you also observe a lot of things as a former player. I think that you notice things that other people don't notice. So I was wondering, from your perspective right now, when you watch practices, you observe the process, you see, even despite the losses, a lot of times it's a good process. We believe like everything is good. But what things do you look for first, like two parts of this question? First, in players during practices, that you see like that this is going into the wrong direction, you need to steer it back into the right direction. And what do you look for in assistant coaches during practices?
I mean, look, here we have a specific situation in Pau, definitely, because, you know, Ergin is Turkish, you know. I mean, we have the Greek assistant coaches, we have Cenk as one of his Turkish assistant coaches. So already we have a, you know, huge, let's say, not trust issue, but we had to build really, really strong connection, trust connection, you know. And we managed to do that last year. And I think that this was the biggest win of last year's season, because at some point, you know, we all came together on board, you know, as one. So if I have to be direct and open about it, you know, it's much, much easier with the players, because being an ex-player, I know many times what the emotions they are going through, you know, or what's happening, why they are practicing the way they are, or why they are not, you know. So it helps me a lot once I talk to them, you know. With the coaches, this is also a learning process, because every coach is different, you know. And I think that one of many positive things about Ergin, it's this, that you can talk to him really openly, and he's always listening, you know, for a good piece of advice. And not only that, when he's wrong or when he makes a certain mistake or whatever, and I wouldn't say now wrong mistake, he admits it, you know, like, and that's a huge thing, that you can have this type of conversation, saying, now, I don't know, Ergin, what do you think, you know, if you put Sani on a four, do you think that can work? And he's like, yeah, it could, you know, this has blah, 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 blah. Or he shuts you down and say, no, I will not do it. And then he does it and he's like, you were right. I should have tried it earlier or whatever. So again, we are coming, what we said before, Benas, not to repeat myself. It's really all about communications and making everybody comfortable by speaking the truth. Because, you know, many times we had, fights,
yeah,
confrontations, you know. It doesn't mean that we have to yell, but my opinion, because I'm sitting on this side of the table, it's different than yours from your office. So, you know, and once you approach many things like this, it's not about whose ego is bigger, who is right, who is wrong. It's about, let's find the best solution, you know. And again, in being in sport environment, the emotions are high. So it can happen that, you know, you clash or something goes wrong. But it's never personal. It's always exchanging of opinions.
For sure, for sure. That's the one thing that I also talked about, that you have so many emotions, that because it's an emotion. Anytime you deal with people and with humans, there's going to be emotions involved to a certain degree, especially in a sport like that, in professional sports at the highest level. Everybody's trying to win. Everybody's looking for the same get an edge and to get ahead of everybody else. And everybody has their opinion. You know, the more experience you have, the more different your opinion may be, because you come from many different angles. And yeah, you go, you argue, you debate, and then even if you yell, you move on, because that's not the importance. It's just like, it's about that one thing that I'm trying to express myself, and then you never get it to a personal level. It's just an expression of opinion. And many people who observe from the outside, who've never been on a team, they're like, this, like, these guys are crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the funny thing is, like you said, because I think that in the past, you know, we had many more confrontation and arguing, you know. And right now, I think we are more exchanging our opinion and debating, you know, because again, even with Sasha, I remember there was really some hot exchanging of opinion in the office going on with the coaches, you know. And I was in shock, like, wow, you know, this is really going on in the office, because as a player, you never see that assistant coach contradicts or tries to impose his opinion on a coach, you know, and that's the beauty of it, because what happens behind closed doors, it's for the coaches and it's their office and, you know, it stays there. That was a shock for me, to be honest. You know?
I can imagine.
But again, it's, you know, being a part of the team is like being a part of a big family where fights are normal, you know. If it's for a better tomorrow and a good of the team.
Yes, exactly. What were you doing in the beginning, is in your role in Olympia, that you don't do anymore now, that like some certain things that you kind of were overdoing or like doing that were not necessary?
I mean, okay, my role is different here than it was there, because there we also had, I was also responsible, sorry, for the youth program, which here I'm not. And at the same time, I was responsible for overseeing of the Cedevita Olympias B team, that is in Zagreb, you know. So this is completely different here. Another thing that I was doing in Ljubljana, I don't do here, is, like I said before, you know, tax stuff, because I'm pretty good with numbers. I understand a lot of stuff that was going on in Slovenia at the time. So it helped me, it helped, you know, to GM, but most of all, I found a really good connection with our accounting lady, Natasha, you know, which was there forever and is still there, and it's one of the best. So these are the things that are different.
I mean, more technically, like in terms of observing practices, players, in terms of scouting, like certain things that you learn that you don't have to do necessarily in order for the team to improve. Certain things that you, like maybe, yeah, like you overdid it. You were thinking, overthinking, doing too much, that you kind of, through experience, that you set aside as like, this is like you shifted the balance of it. Maybe you do less of it.
I mean, in terms of doing less as work, there's nothing to be changed, because you have to follow the, you know, players, you have to know the market, you have to know, I don't know, possibilities that are out there. What I learned, and maybe also because of the nature of our relationship, was in Ljubljana, there was Jurica Golemac, okay, which is a dear friend of mine. We play together, we are close friends. So many times we exchanged opinions, you know, on a friend-to-friend basis, which then got mixed with the position, you know, basis. So this is something that I never do anymore, you know. So whenever we talk, I talk, you know, like a technical director, and I never try to do something as a, you know, let's say off the record or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Honestly, I realized that many times it's really better to let things cool down than, you know, putting oil on the mm-hmm. fire. Or again, it's all about experience, you know. And the Cedevita Olimpia experience, the whole situation helped me a lot, you know, helped me become a really better on what I do, but also become better on analyzing things, because, like I said, you know, many times I mix the friendship with the working side, you know, and it's not good for neither one of us.
Yeah, it's complicated. That's a complicated thing for sure. So one more question before we go into the ATOs, and that's something that I always, you know, in my job it's kind of important, but also in your job I can imagine too, when you, with your experiences, when you watch players, you observe players, and you're thinking of, like, besides the talent level or the technical part, shooter, non-shooter, defender, you know, like all the specifics that we know that players can do or have to do in their role, what other qualities, character qualities, do you look for in a player that kind of feel like that it's a must addition to your roster?
I mean, to be honest, I was really fortunate enough to have good coaches in my career, you know. And if I start, you know, naming them, going from Željko, Messina, Kazlauskas, Ruben Magnano, Jasmin Repeš, Zmago Sagadin, you know, I mean, honestly, Saša Đorđević, I could go on and on and on, and I apologize already for, you know, forgetting someone. The main thing that many of them taught me was, you know, first of all, I get information about the person, you know, because basketball player or whoever is good at doing what he does, you know, like we said before, scoring, rebounding, technical, he turns, he defends, he doesn't, everybody sees it, you know. But I think that the main thing is getting to know the person, because, you know, we spend so many time together that it's much, much easier to forgive, or how to say, not forgive, live with the mistakes that he does on the court, you know, than to try to cover up or run after somebody or punish him, fine him, whatever, off the court, you know. So in order to put a group of people together that need to function as one and as team, is I think the person, you know, it's not the player that is only 2 hours on the court. So my red line is always this. I tend to find the player that has the qualities as a person, you know. Yeah. This is something, again, that came from my dad. And afterwards, I had it with some of the coaches. Like, you know, once you realize that being a player will stop at some point, you know, but being a person, and people will remember you just for that short period as a player, as a person, they will remember you for the rest of your life. It opened up my eyes, you know, and really, because I, at the age of 20, I was, you know, left with no basketball, with nothing, you know, health. I was like, damn, you know, I really, you know, I want to be a good person. Then how I'm going to be as a basketball player, it will come. So this is my ideology of how I approach the player.
Yeah. And that's, we're back to square one. It's about the people. It's about the people you work with. And especially for a team, you want to have less headaches off the court. You know, like it's going to be already a lot of drama on the court in terms of like playing time, in terms of who's playing well, who's not playing well. You're going to have conflict in practices, in the games. You don't want any kind of additional, you know, distractions off the court, basically. So I think that's a very, very good trade for sure. ATOs, you ready?
Yep, let's go.
All right. What's the in this job, does work-life balance exist?
Sorry?
In this job, does work-life balance exist?
No. It's 24-hour work, because, you know, you never know when your phone is going to go off. Once again, you know, huge shout out, thanks, whatever, to my wife, my family, because they understand this. Because, you know, you could be at the most romantic, loving anniversary dinner, and, you know, something goes wrong. You know, somebody had a, God forbid, car accident or something. It's not possible not to answer the phone, you know. So, no, there's no balance. There is always basketball. But it's a funny story, because, you know, when I met my wife, Maurizio Balducci, you know, was my agent at the time, and, you know, God rest his soul. When he met her, he went like, you know what, son is not only yours, you know, he's from all basketball world, you know. The sooner you accept this, the better it's going to be with you, you know, because basketball is the first love, then you came in, so, you know, and it's the reality, it's the truth, you know, because we are married to basketball, you know. There's always this like, oh, it's the game on the TV, or like, you know, we have to go home because I got a game to catch, or, you know, oh, sorry, I need to take this, you know. So, and like I said, even my kids, you know, they understand it. So no balance, sorry.
No balance. Yeah. There's a saying that one of the communication experts that I had on my podcast was organized disbalance. So it's organized, but it's disbalanced. You don't have it nowadays. And high achieving people, you don't have that. If you had to teach a class today and it's not about basketball, what would it be about?
Psychology. Hmm. Psychology. Yeah. I went to FIBA timeout program, you know, and the most interesting and the things I learned there, going through North Umbria College, you know, was the psychology part that really interested me a lot. I hated the, let's say, organization part, or, you know, the venue and all this stuff. But whenever there was psychology, I was all, you know, ears and eyes. And unfortunately, it was Corona time, so all we had to do was, you know, through computer. But it was many things that I still, you know, apply in my everyday job. And the people really helped us a lot, you know. So I think that all the class that we were all together, we learned a lot.
Mm-hmm. What's your information diet? What influences your thought process and, you know, like mental aspect of everything? Where do you get your most information from?
Like daily? I mean,
daily outside the team. Is there anything that you consume, like reading books or what podcasts you listen to, or something that impacts your thinking the most?
It's gonna sound funny, but, you know, I'm quite spiritual person, and the older I get, the more I deal with energies, you know, like Reiki, or, you know, stuff that is out there. just in terms of like reading the person as energy, you know, mm-hmm. what I feel when I'm around them, or what they give me when, I don't know, we speak or stuff like this. So my focus goes a lot to energies. Yeah.
That's very good. Yeah. I'm also very empathetic. You know, you pick
empathetic,
up,
exactly.
Yeah, picking up like the frequency that I communicate
exactly.
with is very
yeah.
important. Yeah.
I didn't know the word is frequency. Yeah. That's what I'm all about lately, you know, looking podcasts, stuff like this. So yeah.
That's why we hit it off right away.
You did. I mean, and you see, I mean, even this podcast, it has a super nice flow to it. You know, it's like
yeah.
we are talking for 5 minutes, and I guess how much people
an hour.
Are going to get,
yeah.
they're going to get bored of us, you know.
No, they will not. They will not. After playing and you finished a career, if there was no front office job, what other avenue outside of basketball would you have gone into?
This is a good question. I honestly never thought about it. Again, you know, being in basketball all my life, because I started at age of 7, you know, I saw European Championship in Zagreb, you know, I knew all the players, I knew everybody. So I was like, this is all I want to do. You know, it's super, it's great. And no, man, I don't know if I could live without basketball, to be honest. You know, it's in my family, it's in my blood, you know, my father being a coach, my sister, mother being inside, even my daughter now and son, you know, it's more than it's life, you know.
It's
so,
you, yeah.
There's no
you.
Answer to that.
On social media, are you on social media a lot? No. Not at all.
Don't have social media.
Twitter or anything?
Twitter is the only social media I use, but I never post. I just use it for collecting the information and being on, you know, on...
In the information world.
So the information, yeah.
What's the favorite follow, non-basketball follow on X?
Shit, now you got me. Now you're well. It's actually connected to food. Me being you know, like a food maniac, I like the food channels everywhere. I'm sorry again,
Jamie Oliver. Jamie Oliver.
Something that people, I guess, don't expect, but you know.
Hey, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Anthony Bourdain, Jamie Oliver.
Yeah. Stop like this.
Okay, so last one, and that's my favorite one from Tim Ferriss. Everybody knows it. I ask that everybody. Your favorite failure from throughout your career that you look back on and you feel like that was a good lesson. You would, you know, it hurt. The lesson hurt, but something that you would you took a lot of pride in it. Going looking back, and you improved from that.
Whew. My favorite failure. That's a good question, man.
Kudos to Tim Ferriss.
He knows
what to ask.
Yeah, Tim, Tim.
Something that helped you to become who you are and you improve from that.
Look, honestly, and this is going to sound like a cliche or, you know, I'm actually thankful, you know, for the injuries I had, because it made me become a better person. Before I was just a player, and I was a hell of a player because I could score. And at the moment, you know, I didn't realize it, but I was cocky. I was, you know, because I always looked through the eyes like, why are you telling me any of this? Because I can score 30, I can score 40, I can score, you know. And once I lost that ability, it kind of opened up different angles to the game, first of all, like, because, you know, I lost all my athleticism, even though I wasn't super athletic even before, but, you know, it hurt my game. And secondly, I really went through so many stages of anger, depression, you know, fighting with myself. Where afterwards, you know, with Virtus, because I was in in a lawsuit that I won. I never got paid. So, you know, it's a process that I went through. And now that I look back at, I met my wife in the most, let's say, important period of my life. She helped me a lot with recovery, with being there for me, going together through so many, you know, situations. So at the end of the day, I said this only in you know, closed circle, but definitely injury made me a person I am today, you know, and not only one. It was a constant reminder.
Constant reminder.
Fuck, if it was only one, I would say, great, you know, I learned. No, I had to go 13 times to learn it, you know.
God,
maybe I was not a quick learner, even though, you know, I was intelligent as a basketball player. I'm not a quick learner, you know. So that's, you know, Tim, man, you made me sweat, man. Come on.
You know, the God from above was like, nope, he didn't learn it yet. Let's do it again.
Again, 13 times, you know. It's like when you ask me how many times it took you to make a driving license. Fuck, 13 times, you know. Get me off the streets, man.
All right, brother. That was great. That was great. Thanks for that, son. It was a great conversation. Like I said, it was the flow was phenomenal.
Likewise, always. Yeah. You know how our coffees are, so this couldn't be any different, you know. So,
absolutely. I assume you're gonna be in Treviso or not?
No, because we start the final series on Friday. We play Friday, Sunday, Wednesday, Friday, Monday. So no, I'm gonna skip Treviso this time. But thank you, you know, and really shout out to all of your fans. Thank you for having me, you know, listening to me. I hope they will find some joy and laughter in our conversation.
For sure. And a lot of lessons.
And a lot of lessons, of course.
You were a requested guest, so it's you're on high demand.
Oh wow. Thank you.
All right, brother. Thank you, everybody, for being here, and see you soon.
See you soon, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.